Barron County Restorative Justice Programs defines the term restorative justice as a set of principles that position crime as a violation of trust between people. Restorative justice is centered around giving voice to the victim, holding offenders accountable, and helping to heal the harm caused. Well, today on the West Side, we're discussing how restorative justice is playing out in the Barron County community and its schools. We'll also learn about how your community might benefit from restorative justice. Good morning, I'm Claire Neipert. Good to have you with us. Joining me today is Mary Heft, who's a professor emeritus of communication arts at the UW-Eau Claire Barron County campus and a volunteer restorative conference facilitator for Barron County Restorative Justice Programs. She's also the co-author of From a Single Pebble, Barron County Restorative Justice Programs. Welcome to the West Side, Mary. We're also joined by Monica Audette, who's the Program Operations Leader of Barron County Restorative Justice Programs and co-author of From a Single Pebble, Barron County Restorative Justice Programs. Welcome, Monica. And Kelly Heft is here, too. Kelly's the School Community Outreach Worker for the Restorative Justice Programs. Good morning, Kelly.
Good morning.
Well, I wanted to start the program by giving a definition of restorative justice. And I did just give a definition a few moments ago at the start of the show, but I wanted to hear from our guests. Monica Audette, how do you describe restorative justice in conversation?
Well, many people think that restorative justice is just a process or a particular program, but it's actually a way of thinking, a way of treating people. I think it differs from our standard of justice by looking at, you know, how someone has caused harm and what they need to do to repair the harm that they caused. Some people might think that, you know, getting a fine is a great way to repair a harm, but there's also people involved in any kind of a crime that we need to repair things with. So that's a piece that we offer in restorative justice that's different from the traditional justice system.
Monica, ultimately, what is the goal of restorative justice?
Well, we actually have a couple of goals. One of the biggest goals, of course, is inclusion. Every party that's involved in a crime is represented, whether it's the community, the offender, and the victim. Oftentimes, one of those parties might be left out in our traditional system. And another part of it is reintegration back into the community, helping people who've caused harm get back into their community and become productive citizens.
And Mary, of course, the program that we're going to be talking about today, the School Community Outreach Worker, this is not a program about crimes, about offenders coming together with victims. This is a program about making sure our children have everything that they need and that their families have everything that they need so that a child can be in school and thrive in school.
And Mary, I'm wondering, how does all of these restorative justice programs fit within our current penal system?
What our programs, well, especially the restorative conferencing, what we're doing is keeping, especially juveniles, but not necessarily juveniles, we're giving them, first-time offenders mainly, an opportunity to make amends, to satisfy the needs of victims, and to keep those nonviolent offenders out of prison. That's our goal with that program, is restore a community, restore a victim, and give that offender another chance, a chance to say, I screwed up, I harmed someone, but I want to make this right. But that's just one, again, that's one of our programs, restorative conferencing.
What evidence is there that restorative justice is more successful than traditional approaches to corrections?
Monica, you might like
sure. to. I'd like to answer that. I think, for one thing, I guess I don't like to compare. I like to think that we're partners and that we're both working towards the same thing, peaceful communities. So we work hand in hand together really well. And I do say that people who come through our programs are 85% successful, meaning they don't reoffend. We're really very successful because a person is really taking a huge look at what their behaviors were and how to prevent themselves from doing the same thing again. So restorative justice has a huge part of the justice system, I think, has a huge place in the justice system because we really help with recidivism.
One of our programs, again, this is the restorative conferencing. A lot of people say, you know what that is? That's a slap on the hand, and it's really not being helpful. But so 8 years after we started that program, we did a comprehensive study. Dr. Eric Casper, political scientist at the UW-Eau Claire, did that study for us and found that juvenile offenders in Bering County, that we had the lowest number of juvenile offenses, that lowest number of juvenile arrests of all 72 counties, and less serious crime, fewer assaults. And this is in a low-cost program that restores victims and keeps this, in case was juvenile offenders, out of prison. How can you lose with a program like that? How is it that not all counties have it? I always wonder that.
Well, I wanted to talk a little bit about your program's history. Your program in Bering County has been around since 1999. Monica Audette, can you give us a brief history of restorative justice in Bering County?
Well, sure. It's kind of a cool little story. Judge Edward Bruner was our circuit court judge at the time, and he had a small child come into his courtroom, and he tells the story about, you know, he couldn't hear the little boy talk, so he asked him to approach the bench, and he approached the bench, and all they could see was his little fingers on the top of the bench because he was so little. And Judge Bruner at that point said, there's got to be another way. There's got to be some other way that we can work with, especially juveniles at that point. So he is the person that was integral in getting us started. He brought together people from all parts of the community, from citizens to teachers to law enforcement and social workers, and brought us all together to decide, or, you know, to take a look at what restorative justice is and how it might fit in our community. And we had my predecessors are really wonderful at getting the community involved in restorative justice. And I'd have to say, I've been here 13 years. When I first started and I began talking to victims and offenders and just young people in school, they had no idea what restorative justice is. And in our community, when we call someone now, they already have an idea of what we do. Hardly anybody ever asks me, what is it anymore? Because I think it's really operationalized into our system here in Bering County.
But in all honesty, I think most people know that we have restorative conferencing. I don't know that they know of any of our other amazing programs, like the one that Kelly's going to be talking about, the school community outreach worker, programs that are doing so much good. So we're more than one program. We're 10 different programs. And Monica's job is to respond to the needs of the community. What does our community need? She just started a vaping program because our community needed a vaping program. So it's impressive. And let me say this again, it's low cost.
Kind of going back to what restorative justice is, it is, we often think about the intervention part of it, like conferencing, and that's why a lot of people think that's just what we do. But we also have that prevention side, which is something Kelly works in the school outreach program. And some of our other programs are preventive as well. Going back to what you said, Mary, we've dropped the juvenile crime rate here. And it makes a huge difference when we can do this prevention work. It's often an area that gets cut in budgets because, you know, it's not as fancy, I think, as intervention.
Monica, I wanted to ask a little bit more about the community impact. You just said that you made a new program in response to the need to talk about vaping. What else have you seen? Have you noticed any changes in recidivism? Okay. Anyway, have you noticed any changes in crime rates? That word.
Yes, I all of our programs have made a difference. That's why they're still here. I believe our victim impact panel is another example of that, which we've spoken about on the radio before. But our OWIs have been reduced, and fatalities in our county have been reduced because of our program and the teaching that we do around drunken driving. We do substance abuse education for young people in our Crime for Life program. And it helps reduce underage drinking, and hopefully, also has an effect on OWIs in the end. We do cognitive behavior intervention work as well, which helps people look at the way they think and reframe it if it's needed, so that they can look at their behaviors in a different way. So there's a lot of ways that restorative justice works in a community. We've been told that we are the broadest restorative justice program in the United States in a rural community because of the different services that we offer. Many restorative justice programs will focus only on conferencing or only on juveniles, but we're pretty broad based in our county.
About results of studies that have been done, like with our victim impact panels, the audience sits there for just about a little over an hour. These are DUI offenders, students who are about to get their driver's license, their parents. And again, a lot of people say, what's an hour going to do? People may listen to the stories of those who have lost lives to drunk drivers, or they may listen to those we have speakers who have killed while they were driving drunk. But a recent study, a 2019 study by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, identified Barron County with the lowest number of alcohol-related driving deaths in Wisconsin.
Wow.
So something that we're doing is working. And again, I can't emphasize this enough, low cost, easy to do. That's why we wrote the book, From a Single Pebble, Barron County Restorative Justice Programs. We wrote that book because we want counties, communities throughout the United States to see how we've done it and to see how easily they can do it.
That's the voice of Mary Heft, who's a volunteer restorative conference facilitator for the restorative justice programs in Barron County. And we're talking about restorative justice here in Western Wisconsin on the West Side. I want to continue talking generally about programs before we move on to talking with Kelly Heft about the school community outreach program. And I have a couple of questions. How does someone get referred to a program?
I can answer that. This is Monica. We get referrals from 40, at least 40 different agencies. They come from schools, principals, they come from law enforcement, directly from law enforcement, school resource officers, social services, the Department of Corrections. The court itself will refer folks to us. It's individuals will call us up and ask for help. All kinds of people are getting referred to us from different agencies. It's just amazing to hear more and more people, like I said, that are self-referring now. That never happened when I first started, and it's pretty common for people to call us now directly.
It sounds like you kind of have to have a lot of buy-in from community partners. And I was wondering, what is there a special relationship that needs to happen there, Monica, with the courts and law enforcement officers for this program to be successful?
Yes, I think you hit the nail on the head. It does take a lot of community buy-in, and I'd have to say not everybody buys into it, but many of us do when you see the results of the program and just the satisfaction of people who've experienced it as well. They feel like they are not judged. They feel whole again after having gone through the program. They feel able to move on and move on with their life. And I think the results themselves are a big part of people buying into the program. We do get referrals from outside of our county, and it's always interesting to work with them because we're so used to our, you know, the way we do things here. Everything's done pretty easily in Barron County, and I sometimes forget that they don't have the same systems that we do, or even the same train of thought that we do about justice. So we're really fortunate here that we've had it for a number of years, and it's pretty operationalized again, like I said, in our community. I do want to point out that there is a restorative justice program in Eau Claire. Eau Claire Restorative Justice Program is a sister program to our program.
And then Kelly, I wanted to talk about the relationship that you have as a school community outreach worker with administration and schools. What kind of buy-in is there with that?
Well, with the schools that we're all in, there's obviously has to be a lot of buy-in to get us into the school. They have to know what the benefit is and know what we're capable of doing and how we can help in the school district.
Mm. And okay, so someone gets referred to your program, and there's tons of different programs like we've mentioned, but just very generally, like, what would a conference look like between, you know, two groups of people? Mary, you're a facilitator. What does that look like?
So first I meet with the victim usually. We just switched from the school community outreach worker, Kelly, and now we're back to restorative conferencing. In a restorative conference, I meet with a victim. I find out if the victim is willing to participate and what the victim would want from a restorative conference. So if he or she is willing to participate and I can help them with possibilities of what they can get out of a conference, then I go to the offender and I say to the offender, you know, I find out if they're remorseful, if they're willing to participate, if they're willing to do what the victim needs in order for the victim to feel whole again. If they indicate that they have something healing to offer the victim, then we go forward with the conference. And in that conference, the victim makes it really clear to the offender what he or she needs. Sometimes it's just community service. Sometimes it's payment in full of everything that was taken from them. Sometimes it's helping out a friend of theirs who needs community service, who needs help on a farm or with a business. If the offender says they're willing to do it, then I write up a contract. It goes to Monica. It goes to the office. Those in the office, they follow the contract. When it's fulfilled, then the offender is, and the offender has satisfied the contract, then they're done.
A big question that I have is, in that whole process, it's obviously a delicate conversation, maybe, and how do you avoid re-traumatizing a victim?
Oh, we have things in effect. As soon as we feel that things aren't going right, we stop the conference, and that's been seldom. I've been doing this for 20 years, and it's seldom that I've ever had to stop a conference. I take the offender out into the hallway. I say, look, unless you have something positive to offer the victim, we're stopping this now. So sometimes offenders have a tough time finding the words, understanding how they can communicate that they're sorry to the victim. But seldom does that happen.
One thing that I can say is, so many people think about the conferencing and think about it as what it's doing for the offender. Usually the offender gets, or the victim gets so much more out of this conferencing. You know, so often in the traditional sense, a victim never knows what happens to the offender. The victim never gets an apology. The victim never knows why the person did what they did. So it is just as beneficial, sometimes even more beneficial for the victim than it is the offender.
Now we're back on this episode of The West Side, where we're talking about restorative justice in Barron County. I wanted to move to the specific program that we're speaking about, which is the School Community Outreach Program. In the 2018 to 2019 school year, the School Community Outreach Program served about 450 students. Monica Audette, can you please explain how the School Community Outreach Program began?
Well, the executive director at the time at Barron County Restorative Justice went into the school districts and spoke with his superintendents and asked them, you know, what is the biggest issue that you face in the schools and how can we help? And their number one answer was truancy or chronic absenteeism. And so we formulated the program using a grant that we got and working in all of the school districts in Barron County. And when our grant funding was up, several of our school districts said, hey, you're making a huge difference in the schools. We want to keep you. So our school districts actually fund part of this program. And we have three outreach workers that work directly in the school districts full time. They're at the schools every day working with students and working to help with barriers that keep them from attending school.
So how many schools in Barron County have a community outreach worker?
We are full-time in our three biggest school districts in Barron County.
And Kelly Heft, you are in one of those schools. Which one are you in currently?
Correct. I'm in the Cumberland School District.
So Kelly, talk more about your job. What do you do as a school community outreach worker?
So there's a lot of different levels to it. I'm in all three schools, the elementary school, middle school, and the high school. And kind of the primary role is to work on absenteeism. Now, so sometimes people say, you know, you're the truancy officer. And in a sense, yes, but really the goal is to not ever have to file for truancy. So it's how, you know, looking at the who's absent on a daily basis and trying to figure out why. So we can reach out to the families and say, hey, your child is missing so much school. Is there something we can do to help? You know, sometimes it's parents just say, oops, I didn't realize they could only miss so many days. And then we kind of talk about the education on why it's so important for them to continuously be at school. Some parents sometimes say, hey, I'm struggling to get my kid to school. So we can meet with the parents and the kids and, you know, kind of let the kids know. So, you know, we can kind of assist the parents in getting the kids to school. And then, you know, kind of beyond that, there's just a lot of different reasons why kids would be missing school. You know, it could be homeless. It could be struggles. It could be bullying at school, and just tons and tons of different underlying reasons. And we try to work with the child and work with the parents to work on that issue to, you know, make it a better environment for them. So there's a lot of different things we do and a lot of different steps depending on what we find out the underlying issue is.
And you kind of hinted at it in your answer there, but Kelly, how does someone refer to your program, a child? Is it always their parent or does sometimes the school come into play?
Yeah, it could be any of those. I mean, certainly a parent could contact us. Certainly a principal could let me know. The attendance staff, they can let me know, or just myself. I look at the attendance daily and, you know, kind of pull people in. Otherwise, it could be from a teacher. So again, it's kind of the primary thing is looking at the attendance, but I end up doing a lot of different things. Department of Health and Human Services have cases that, you know, that they'll bring me in to work on together as a team. So they know there's someone in the school district, that someone specific that they know they can reach out to if they're having issues. So yeah, there's a lot of different ways people get referred.
And do you have any stories about how you've worked with children and kept them in school? If you do, I'd really like to hear them.
Yeah, I can kind of just tell some general things. I can't be too specific, so it kind of, you know, focuses, you know, on specific families. But really, I just kind of sit down and meet with them and talk to them. And every story is a little bit different. You know, there's one specific family that I've been working with for 3 years, you know, and it's always kind of a struggle for them to come, but just talking to them, reminding the parents of how important school is, talking to the kid and making sure things are going well. You know, I have a lot of different things that we can give kids. Sometimes kids don't have, you know, clothes at home or clean clothes at home. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they don't have hygiene supplies. So I've got tons of stuff in my office that I can give them that will help them feel more comfortable knowing they've got stuff to take a shower or, you know, have fresh clothes. You know, and then it's different in the high school, potentially, you know, sitting down with kids and letting them know that it's really important to go to school. You know, some work with rewards, can give them ideas of, we can give you this reward if you show up at school. Some obviously kind of, you talk about the consequences of, we will have to file truancy, not our goal, you know, so what can we do? What steps can we take to get you here so that doesn't happen? And that's kind of with the truancy. I mean, and absenteeism. But like I said, we work with families that, you know, with Department of Health and Human Services that are just kind of meeting with the kids. And it might not have anything to do with absenteeism, but just knowing that they've got, you know, support at the school and someone that they can talk about, someone that knows what's going on in their household and they can trust at the school to talk to, and they don't have to kind of reshare everything that's going on.
So what do you do when your efforts to help a child or their family doesn't work? What do you turn to then?
You know, kind of depends on what the situation is, but I guess realistically, for the most part, you just keep trying. You attempt something else. You attempt a new strategy. You know, work. Obviously, I work closely with the principals. I work closely with our counselors here. So we kind of all, you know, bring stuff together, and the teachers, obviously, put our heads together and say, hey, let's try something else. Let's attempt something new, since what we're doing isn't working.
I'm getting a question here from a listener that I think would be good for maybe Mary Heft or Monica Audette. So Hal, he lives in La Crosse and he comes from Northern Iowa. He's wondering, what does it take to be a volunteer in this type of program? Do you need any sort of education or training or certification? Mary, what do you think?
I can tell you that I went through a wonderful training program. Again, that was 21 years ago, but what Monica is going to be starting, and Monica, you might like to talk about that. There's going to be a new training program in our county. Monica, can you hear me?
Sure. Yep. We offer training to our volunteers. It's pretty intensive training, and it's actually ongoing all the time, where we are working with our volunteers. They usually work with a staff member for a long time so that they can get comfortable, understand how to work with people and what the expectations are. And so we like people who are also credible messengers, which we've heard that term before, as people who have life experience and also can offer support and help to the folks that we're working with. If they can identify with you, they can often make changes in their life easier because they feel like someone's on their side and really understands them. So some of the families that we're working with have substance abuse problems, mental illness in their families, just poverty in general or homelessness, that we can help address those issues, as well as, you know, helping get those kids to school. In this case, that there's a lot of things that can go on at home that makes it hard for a kid to get up in the morning and get to school. You know, if they just experienced dad or mom beating on each other, and then they got to get out the door and get on the bus. Holy cow, what a day that starts out. So what are their behaviors going to be in school as well? And that's where that outreach worker can really step in and help those children have someone to connect to. Like Kelly said, they have someone to talk to. So volunteers, yep, we take volunteers. It's a big part of representing the community in our program. And as Mary hinted, we're going to do a volunteer training coming up at the end of June, and hoping to get some new volunteers. After COVID, we didn't use a whole lot of volunteers during COVID, so we're looking for new volunteers again.
This is Mary again. When I was trained, I'm a communications professor, but I think, did you say his name is Hal, who called in? You don't need to be a communications professor to do something like this. It's for victim impact, for victim offender conferences. All I need to do is be a good listener, and it's a process. The questions are there that we ask, we listen, we let the victim respond, we let the offender respond. So it's that being a really good facilitator between victim and offender.
Mm-hmm. And if someone were interested in maybe being a school community outreach worker, Kelly, what did you go through any sort of training to be in your role?
Certainly went through some of the same types of trainings. Obviously, there's a process in the first few weeks of learning and sitting down and thinking about the different things that we could do. I learned, obviously, how to be a facilitator, so I can do any type of facilitating within the school as well.
One thing is Kelly also has work experience. Prior to being an outreach worker, she was a police officer, so that was a great background. I mean, her background in criminal justice really helped her do well at her job.
I want to return to talking more about that school outreach program. Mary Heft, I was wondering, how serious is the problem of truancy among elementary school students?
K through three, and I don't think a lot of listeners even realize this, in grades kindergarten through third grade, 10% is the average of all of the schools. 10% of those children are chronically absent. That means they're missing 10% of their schooling. And the effects of that on young children who then aren't learning how to read. And then by the time they get to high school, the studies show that approximately 20 to 25% of our high school students are chronically absent. So a program that, like the one Kelly is involved in, that's keeping our children where they need to be in school, but not only just keeping them in a desk. Studies are showing that our children are thriving. And Monica's got those results, I think.
In our school districts, once we start working with a child, 75% of them show improvement in attendance, behavior, and academics within a three-month period. So we're making a difference. It doesn't mean that we quit working with them after 3 months. There's many children that we work with for several years, but just keeping them in school helps them get towards graduation, which is our goal. We want students to graduate high school. So we have a really high graduation rate in our county. We also have good attendance in our county, and it's, I think, due to the work that our outreach workers do.
That's the voice of Monica Audette, who is the program operations leader of Barron County Restorative Justice Programs. And we're talking about truancy in elementary schools right now here on the West Side. So I work myself part-time in an elementary school, and just very anecdotally, I can see that when children miss consecutive days of school, there's a lot of learning to make up for. I'm wondering, what is the underlying cause of truancy at the elementary level, Mary Heft?
Well, Kelly, I bet you'd be better able to respond to that.
Go ahead, Kelly.
There's so many underlying conditions. It could be you know, parents, parents don't, poverty is one. If they can't make the bus, they can't get the kids to school if they don't have a working car. Or a lot of times parents do have to work and they can't get their kids on the bus. So if the kid's not, if the kid misses the bus, they end up staying at home for the day. It could be just not understanding, you know, some families don't really understand the importance of the consistency of being at school and understand what they really miss in a day. So, you know, being able to, for us to understand, you know, what each family's individual issue is, helps us better be able to work with them. You know, if they can't make it to school, you know, if they miss the bus, you know, make a plan who could bring them, or if there's someone at the school that could go get them. If it is that the parents don't understand or the kids don't understand the importance of school, we can talk to them and kind of explain to them what it is that they really miss out on, and the education along with the bonding with the friends. Sometimes kids just don't want to go to school because, you know, there maybe they feel like they're getting bullied. So then we can kind of work on that issue and say, okay, what's going on? How can we make them feel more safe at the school?
Monica Audette, how do you determine if your school outreach program is successful overall in its mission to bring back pre-truant children into the classroom?
So I named earlier the three areas that we look at when we're looking at success. We look at improvement in academics, improvement in attendance, and improvement in behavior in the classroom. So basically, are they staying in the classroom, their behaviors, they're not getting sent out of the classroom due to their behaviors. So interestingly, behavior is the first thing that improves before attendance improves, but behavior in the classroom improves, and then comes attendance and then academics. And so we're constantly monitoring that to make sure that we're making a difference. And, you know, early on in we're talking about K through three truancy. There's, like Kelly said, many reasons why kids aren't being in school. COVID had a huge impact on truancy because sometimes there's parents who say, I got to work and now my kids are home and they're not getting online to do their schooling because they need the older child to watch the younger child or something like that. There's just lots of things that parents might need help with getting figured out. As well as just folks that don't value education until they understand that if you don't get a high school diploma throughout your whole life, you're always going to earn less than you might have. And you're more likely to be incarcerated if you don't have a high school diploma. There's a lot of issues that come from not getting an education, you know, this domino effect. So it's really important for kids to be attending school. If they get behind, it's harder and harder to get caught up and makes it harder by the time you get to high school. They can be so credit deficient that they feel like they can't succeed. So those are all reasons why we really want to concentrate on those young children, especially, and help parents get good routines in place so that their kids are in school.
Monica brought up a good point that I want to touch on with you, Kelly Heft. How did COVID and virtual school kind of change your job and what you do?
Well, it's definitely been different because now we're dealing with the kids in school and we're dealing with kids online. It was a lot of calling families, and we consistently looked at, for the online families, consistently looking and making sure they're keeping up with their work, which some were, some did great, and a lot didn't. So obviously, you know, we had to work with the school administration and the principals and everyone kind of coming together to find out what the best options are. Some of the kids that didn't do well for a semester had to come back second semester or do an online program of their own. To give them incentive. So it's been interesting. A lot of calls to families and a lot of trying to hold people accountable. And then the in-school was definitely different because there were a lot of people getting sent home because they had COVID symptoms and then had to get quarantined. So still trying to hold them accountable when they're quarantined and sent home and couldn't come to school. You know, it's a real struggle because a lot of kids have missed a lot more days, but you know, they were required to. So it's been interesting. And this year there have been more truancies because some people aren't holding themselves accountable, kind of maybe used it as an excuse. It's just been a little bit different.
Today on the West Side, we're talking about restorative justice in Barron County. I wanted to turn now to funding. On Barron County Restorative Justice Program's website, which is goodwillncw.org, you all report that your expenses in 2018 were less than $300,000. Monica Adet, where do you receive your funding?
I think one of the reasons why our program has lasted so many years is that we have diversified funding. We have support from our county. We have support from Goodwill of North Central Wisconsin. They fund about one third of our budget. So basically when people shop at Goodwill, some of the proceeds come to help fund our programming. And we charge small program fees for people to go through our programs. Most of our programs are around $50 or less. I don't remember yet if I mentioned the school districts. They help support our program. And then donations, grants, and anywhere we can get help. Salvation Army is also a big supporter of us. And our area community funds have helped us a lot to keep our, you know, keep us going every year. And funding's always an issue. I think that's why some programs have not continued over the years. There used to be quite a few more restorative justice programs in Wisconsin, and once they could no longer get funded, they've disappeared. So that's probably, as any nonprofit, it's the hardest part of the work that we do is getting funding.
And Clara, you asked us earlier how many school districts have the school community outreach worker, and unfortunately the answer is only three, because those schools have to pay, choose to pay $35,000 toward the cost, and then we take care of the rest of the funding, because we're a program of Goodwill North Central Wisconsin, of their employees of Goodwill North Central. But right now, one of our schools, and they had a community outreach worker, but because funding was so bad for schools, they had to choose, are we going to be able to have a nurse or an outreach worker? I mean, these are difficult, difficult times for school districts. We're so grateful to the three schools, districts that have said yes to a community outreach worker, because when Monica and I were interviewing superintendents and principals at the schools that have the outreach worker, overwhelmingly they said thanks to the outreach worker who's dedicated solely to keeping those children well and in school, they've seen their students thrive. So we need more school districts to adopt this program. We just aren't sure where they're able to get the funding. We hope that we get more schools engaged in this program.
And we talked before about how Mayor, you mentioned how you wish that this program is so cheap to run. You said that you wished other communities could do the same thing. Can you talk a little bit about how it's sustainable?
Well, it's only sustainable if the school districts can come up with $35,000. And so the question is, how are school districts sustainable? School districts need more financial support, and of course we don't have any control over that. We wish we could offer those services free, but Goodwill, as Monica said, struggles to maintain a very low budget of $300,000 for all of these programs, but it's still a constant struggle.
There are things that, oh, if I can say too, there are things that a community can do that's very low cost. I think the number one thing that helps keep our costs low is using volunteers to help with getting our programs out there, getting, you know, if I had to hire one staff member, I wouldn't be able to, but volunteers take up the place of that in many of our areas. So that makes a huge difference. Volunteers are very important to nonprofits.
Monica, Dad, I wanted to end our program with talk of the future. So briefly, can you give me where you think that Barron County Justice, Restorative Justice programs will go in, let's say, 2 years' time? What are you looking ahead for?
I think we're looking ahead to doing even more with the court system, keeping cases out of court. That costs a lot more for someone to go through court than it does to go through restorative justice. So in our county, we're hopefully moving to doing more pre-charge cases. We do a lot of adult cases through diversion court. So I think that's a huge part of our future. And I think restorative justice in general, there's so much cry in our country for justice reform that I think, you know, restorative justice is a good part of the solution for justice reform.
We could do a whole nother hour about this topic, but we'll have to wait for another time. I wanted to say thank you so much to our guests, Kelly Heft, who's the school community outreach worker for Barron County Restorative Justice Programs. Thank you, Kelly.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Monica Audette, who's the program operations leader from Barron County Restorative Justice Programs and co-author of From a Single Pebble, Barron County Restorative Justice Programs. Thank you, Monica.
Thanks, Clara, for having us today.
And finally, thank you, Mary Heft. Mary is also a co-author and a volunteer restorative conference facilitator. Thank you, Mary.
Thank you, Clara.
Rick Ryer helped produce today's program. Kate Spranger is our on-air producer. She also manages publicity. Looking ahead next week on the West Side, we're talking about updates to rural broadband. Governor Tony Evers announced earlier this month that Eau Claire will test internet access via satellites. You'll hear more about that project next week at 10 on this station. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Clara Neipert, and this is The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio.